Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your mother f***ing ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 169 of the Stone Age Gamer podcast for the week of September 29th, 2017. I am Chris Randazzo and joining me as always is pastel colored RPG Dan Ryan.
Good evening.
It's the last week of the month, and that means it's time for the 10-20-30. But before we go any further, here's your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Just include the word Stone Age Gamer in the podcast line. You can let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future, or just say hello, because we always want to hear from you, the listener. And isn't it fun sometimes just trying to figure out why I call you what I call you?
It really is. Like, I purposefully do not look at these until we start recording, because I don't want, like, I want it to be organic. I feel our listeners deserve that.
They do. So, Dan, what have you been up to? How are you?
Oh, I'm not sick anymore, so that's cool.
I am. I'll be coughing throughout this entire episode.
Which will be so good for everyone to listen to. Like, I'm really excited about that part. I went to Virginia last weekend. It was lovely.
Is it in fact for lovers?
It was in fact for lovers. We had a really incredible dinner. Like, my father-in-law lives in, apparently, according to the YouTubes, the worst city in Virginia.
Hmm.
So, but they had a really good restaurant and a really good brewery, and it was a good time. And I have played nothing since we last talked. I have not even touched Metroid. Literally, I am in the same exact spot as I was last week.
Well, hot damn.
Yeah, it makes me really sad.
You've at least played PAD, right? You've kept up on that?
Well, that goes without saying, Chris.
I just want to make sure you didn't break the streak.
No, God, no. Like 780 days or some nonsense. One of these days, I'm actually like going to pay attention to what it is on a Wednesday so I can be accurate. Hmm. But, yeah, there's been a lot going on in the PAD stuff, but you know, anyway. What about you?
Well, first and foremost, I finished Metroid. I did that last night.
Son of a bitch.
I don't want to spoil the end for you, but it's
please do not.
I can at least confirm that there is the option to, and I didn't take it at first, but there is indeed the option to travel through the whole game with the baby Metroid, like I thought.
Yes.
So it plays out very similar to the end of Metroid 2, except for one very surprising and very big difference right at the very, very end. There's also a post credits sequence, which is
really
pretty neat. Yeah.
Samus is actually Pit. Is that the spoiler?
No.
Like, you've been playing Kid Icarus games this whole time. You didn't even know.
Well, I know it was very cool. It definitely pays a little homage to the ending of Metroid 2 on the Game Boy, when she's like, you know, there's space in the background and she's just running towards the screen.
Right.
They do that for a little bit, and it's pretty nice. Then the rendition of the ending music is great. The whole last boss battle against the Queen Metroid was pretty freaking cool. It was I don't know which one I like better, between that and the AM2R one. Because the AM2R one was really cool, but I feel like it dragged on a little long. Like,
yeah.
That just kept going. And that was really cool at first, but by the time I got to the last phase of that, I was like, come on, can I be done with this now?
Enough. I've been doing this for 3 weeks. I don't even know where I live anymore. This is
like, it was
bullshit.
Really, really cool the way they handled it and made it just like so much more intense. But man, what they did at the end of Samus Returns was like, it almost seems like it was directly aimed at the criticisms from Other M's storyline, because it just involved, again, no spoilers, but it just involves Samus being completely level-headed and unfathomably badass. So, hooray for that.
It doesn't involve her being a ditzy broad.
It doesn't involve her seeing, let's say, seeing Ridley for the 900th time and being like, Ridley, oh no! And losing her shit to the extent that she loses her armor because she can't focus enough because she's just gone through complete and total batshit crazy sobbing because Ridley's there.
Chris, she's a woman. We all know they're emotional.
Fucking hell.
I mean... Come on. They have lady parts.
Yeah, and that totally means that they just lose their shit totally under any pressure. Even when facing off against somebody that they've literally murdered several times before at that point.
Right. I mean, if movies and television shows have taught me anything, it's that ladies think and are controlled by their lady parts, and their lady parts are banana sandwich.
Send your hate mail to... In case if you didn't pick up on any of the sarcasm, please send your hate mail too.
Speaking of, how excited are you? And maybe you haven't even seen a trailer for it, but the Steve Carell Emma Stone Battle of the Sexes movie, she's playing Billie Jean King, and he's like, "I'm going to put the show back in chauvinism." I am so fucking excited for this movie. It looks incredible.
I'm very excited for that, but I'm slightly more excited for Downsizing. I saw the trailers for both of those at about the same time, and Downsizing really speaks to me. That looks fun.
Did you see the trailer for Isle of Dogs?
I did.
What the fuck is that about? Can we spend the next hour at least trying to figure out what the fuck Wes Anderson is doing? I love Wes Anderson.
Yeah, me too. I'm a huge Wes. And Fantastic Mr. Fox is one of my favorite movies of his.
Brilliant. It's beautiful. Like, and Life brilliant. Aquatic and just, I have no idea what's going on with this movie, but I'm 100% on board.
Me too.
I just don't know if I should take the kids or not. Like, I haven't figured that part out yet.
Well, you know what, my kids, I think you should too, because I think it's aiming for the same humor as Fantastic Mr. Fox, which my kids enjoy. Well,
oh, my kids loved it.
I can't say my kids enjoy. My, you know, Ellie just screams a lot, but John likes most of Fantastic Mr. Fox. You know, it's one of the movies he'll sit through the majority of. So, and I just love that movie to death.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Anyway, so
back to video games. Because I've had, you know, somewhat momentous occasions going on here. I finally got to the last boss of Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, which I've been playing through since it launched a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. That game is really, really hard. It's just obscenely hard, and I've just been picking away at it very slowly, like very, very slowly. John finally was interested in me playing it with him again, so. Because we played through the first Donkey Kong Country, and then I was like, I'm going to segue this back into Tropical Freeze and see if I can finally finish this game. And man, the last world or so, just some levels were just insanely tough. But good lord, that is a good game. That is one of the most intensely crafted platformers I've ever played, and not nearly enough people played it. And I'm actually thinking of writing a whole article on why I think that is, because Donkey Kong Country Returns sold like hotcakes, and of course that was on the Wii, and Tropical Freeze was a Wii U game, but still, I feel like it should have sold more than it did, and I have theories as to why. But if you haven't played that game, and you have a Wii U, you gotta buy it. It's not super expensive, and it is just so good. And
it is
David Wise's
very
soundtrack
good.
Alone, there are so many tracks in that game. It is I think there's a different song for every level in the game, which is just nuts. Ugh, it's fantastic game.
It's really good.
I haven't beaten the last boss yet because the bosses John tends to get bored with because I die over and over again. And it's like the same thing.
Geez, Dad.
I'm just gonna find some time to fight the last boss on my own. But in Metroid, I'm at the point where I'm going back and finding all the items now. So I still have some work to do on that before I polish off Tropical Freeze for good. I also got to do something today that I have wanted to do since I was a small child. As a wee lad growing up in Smithville, New Jersey, there was a rec center, a recreational center in our town that I would go to, and it had a couple of pool tables and some arcade machines in there. And that was the first place I ever saw Mario Brothers. I was a humongous Nintendo fanatic. I loved Super Mario Brothers. And then I saw Mario Brothers, like, whoa, this is what came before Super Mario Brothers? Amazing. And I just lost my mind on that machine.
My mind is blown.
I put so many quarters into the look and the sound of that game. I adore to death. It's one of my favorite arcade games ever. And I remember finding out that it was on NES through one of my posters. And I was like, Mom, you got to get me Mario Brothers on NES. She's like, you have Mario Brothers. I'm like, no, I have Super Mario Brothers. I want Mario Brothers.
No. I have Super Mario Brothers. Totally different.
Totally better, different game.
But
so
different.
She drove me out to get it, and I picked it. We got it at, I think, KB Toys. And I remember driving home and tearing open the box and flipping through the instruction manual and being so excited to get home, plug it into my Nintendo, and watch the turtles fall on their back and jump out in their underwear and kick the shells. And it didn't happen. Because no, everything it was like slightly different. Like, it's a great arcade port. Like, it's really, really well done, but the fireballs are tiny and it's missing a bunch of the animations. And I know later in Japan there was like a Kaiteka, or however you say it, Mario Brothers, that had a bunch of like the bigger fireballs and stuff in it.
Right.
I have always wanted an opportunity to buy the arcade version of Mario Brothers on a home console to sit and play on my TV. And it's never happened before. I even got my Raspberry Pi earlier this year, and then Mario Brothers doesn't work properly on it, because apparently that's a thing. Mario Brothers arcade just has some weird compatibility issue that nobody's ironed out for the Raspberry Pi. Of all the games, of course, it's like the one thing that I really want. So,
right.
Arcade Archives has been selling really well on Switch, the stuff by Hamster, and they've been doing all these Neo Geo games, and they announced the last Nintendo Direct that Hamster will be porting Nintendo arcade titles to the Switch, and the first one was Mario Brothers, which came out earlier today, and I bought it, and I sat and I played it in front of my kids. I didn't even care if they were bored, which they weren't. They both were actually really enthralled by it, and I'm happy as can be. Like, the sound is all like weird and muted and stuff, because that's what it sounds like in the arcade game. Like, it is so stupidly accurate. It's got online leaderboards, all kinds of different filters you can do. Like, it's wonderful. It was $8, and I know some people think that's overpriced for Mario Brothers. I don't give a crap. It's it's an arcade perfect translation of Mario Brothers, and I've wanted to have that in my hands, in my house, since I was a tiny little boy, and now I have it.
Well, I am very happy for you.
I'm very happy for me, too. And tomorrow it's going to get even worse, because tomorrow Picross comes out on Switch. And yeah. I am obsessed with Picross.
Yes, you are.
I freaking love Picross. I don't even care how much it is. It's probably going to be dirt cheap. It's like super sparse, just like the Picross E games on 3DS. But now I can play them on my TV or on the go. I'm so excited for Picross. I'm buying the crap out of that tomorrow. And they announced that Spelunker game that came out on Switch a while back is getting translated and brought over to America. Because I've almost bought that on the Japanese eShop a bunch of times. But there's a bunch of Japanese text. And I was like, I don't know. Maybe someday it'll get a wishy-washy on buying it. And now I don't have to buy the Japanese version. I'll just wait for the American one.
Life is good, guy. Chris.
Life is good, man. I've got way too many good games to play. And just
that's
as a general
problem.
Thing, you know, for the smart and strong businessmen who listen to this show that run Namco, you need to port the first Katamari to Switch.
Yeah.
Because I want to play that game all the time. And it's
always.
Getting it's
I
getting
always
want to
play that game.
You know, I have my backwards compatible PS3 hooked up to my TV in my basement, and like, sure, I can grab my Katamari disc and play it there, and that's great. But it's time to put the first Katamari on something else. And like, all the sequels were neat, and it's all great. There's a mobile phone version, but the original one was magic, and that needs to get put places. And those places are Switch,
the Switch in your basement, ready.
Yeah,
to go.
I want to be able to bring it to work and just.
Oh, that seems like such a bad idea.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it seems like a great idea. Don't get me wrong. But
well, I mean, Picross is like, my job just got so much busier over the last like week or so. Like, I now have way more responsibilities and stuff to do at work, which is great. But now there's going to be Picross sitting next to me.
Great.
I'm thrilled about it. I love my job. I really, I love my job. I love what I do. And but having Picross next to me is going to make me at least think about being less productive.
I mean, all right. That's
all right. So that was fun. Catching up on what we're doing in our lives. But now it's time for the 10, 20, 30. As you may or may not know, once a month, last week of the month, Dan and I will talk about games that came out this month, 10, 20, and 30 years ago. And so we're going to start with 10 years ago, 2007. There's some neat, interesting stuff coming out around this time 10 years ago. So we'll start with Drawn to Life for DS.
Never played it.
It's pretty neat. I've only played very little of it. I remember getting a free copy of it because I loved the concept of it so much. Mm-hmm. And I was working for Game Crazy at the time, and we were at one of those Game Crazy convention things.
Right.
And we were talking to the developers, which I miss that stuff so much. We used to go to these great meetings where we'd sit in a room and like game developers would come out and talk to us about the games they're working on so that we could sell them. And it was wonderful. I miss that those times. But we were talking to the devs of this game, and I was just talking about, like, I think they were talking about Scribblenauts or something.
Okay.
I think they were talking, no, they weren't talking about Scribblenauts yet, because that wasn't in existence yet. No, they were just talking about Drawn to Life, and I remember bringing up how much I wanted to buy the game, and it seems like such a cool concept, and the guy just gave me a copy right then and there. He just, like, reached behind his desk, grabbed a copy of the game, tossed it to me, and was like, oh, fantastic, thank you.
Sweet.
I did play a little bit of it. I just never got around to actually playing through it. But this was the first, right. Like, this was the beginning of what these guys did. It was Drawn to Life, and then I think the second one was Locke's Quest. That was like the kind of make your own tower defense kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Drawn to Life was the game where you draw your own characters and then play as them in the game, which was really cool use of the touchscreen on the DS. But then they really hit their stride with Scribblenauts, which was brilliant.
Yeah, I've never played either.
Did you play Scribblenauts?
No.
Wow.
Well, I mean, I think I played like a couple minutes of it. I think
it's a neat game. I would love to see them tackle it again.
Yeah,
because they kind of went a little too far with it. Like they kind of Mega Man'd it a little bit, where they're just like, and sequel after sequel after sequel.
And, right, and the DC Scribblenauts and the fucking
DC Scribblenauts is hilarious, but there's something about the original, there was like this magic of the original game and the original concept of it that, of course, you could then break because once you've figured out, like, you can put black holes everywhere and wait, God. No, but, just the ridiculous shit you could do with that game.
I have played it because I bought it for my daughter on her iPad. And we there played it together. Yeah. Okay. Fun thing. Anyway, Drawn to Life. I'm almost positive I haven't played.
Yeah, and it got a couple of different ports to different platforms. It was a neat game. Mostly, it's important for jumpstarting that studio, which I'm drawing a blank on their name now. So yeah, Drawn to Life, cool game. 10 years old. Hooray!
Hooray!
Heavenly Sword.
I love this game.
This is a game that I think I bought and never got around to playing.
Really? It's really good.
It looked really cool. I was really into it. I was really stoked to get it. But I think it was one of those, it came out before I had a PS3. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to get this game eventually, and then I'm going to play it, and it's going to be great. And then I wound up getting a PS3, and like the first thing I got was, Metal Gear, because I bought it before I bought the system. But the first thing I bought to play on it was Uncharted. And then I think it just kind of fell off the list of things to do because other games were coming out. But it looks like it's got a lot in common with God of War, right? Like it's kind of hack and
very,
slashy.
Yeah, very similar hack and slashy. Just as a quick aside, you may want to consider signing up for PlayStation Plus and keeping that $10 subscription going because the game this month or for October is Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain.
Yeah, that doesn't get me a box.
But $10 and you get to just have it.
Yeah, $10. What is it? $10 a month forever? And then as soon as I stop paying it, then I don't have that game anymore. And well, I don't have a PlayStation 4.
Well, I know, but you will have it. So like you buy it, you spend the $10 this month, you get the Metal Gear Solid download, and then you don't activate it again until you get a PS4, but then you still have the game download.
Yes, but I'm eventually just going to buy the game in a box someday. And get the physical copy, because that's the kind of whore I am for Metal Gear.
You are.
And did you not just hear the list of games that I have in front of me, like, a few minutes ago? When the hell am I going to play games on PlayStation Plus?
I know. Well, and especially a 50-hour Metal Gear Solid 5. But
yeah, seriously, that's just not going to happen. And really, at this point, one of my big PS4 pushes is now coming out on Switch. And if they announce Dragon Ball FighterZ is coming out on Switch, then the only thing that's forcing me to buy a PlayStation 4 is Bubsy. And honestly, I'll just buy the game and let it sit on a shelf.
God of War wouldn't convince you, but Bubsy is the one that's putting... Okay. Anyway, Heavenly Sword. Yeah, there was a lot of... There was a lot of the QuickTime events, very similar to God of War. This was kind of what Sony was doing at the time because this was an exclusive Sony thing, like they published it.
Was this Ninja Theory?
Ninja Theory, yeah. I don't know that they're an exclusive developer to Sony. They might have been at the time.
How has there not been a sequel to this game?
Well, because they went on and then, well, because no, then they made Enslaved, which was cool. It was the story of Journey to the West, which is the Sun Wukong Chinese mythology story, which is very cool. And I enjoyed that game, but that was Xbox 360. And then they did the Devil May Cry, the DMC remake.
Yeah.
Which was really good. I'm looking at their list here. They did Disney Infinity, Marvel Super Heroes, Disney Infinity 3.0. And now their next game, Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice. That is coming for PlayStation 4 and Windows. So basically for Xbox. Yeah, so no, it was just this first game that was PlayStation exclusive, but I really liked it. The main character, Nariko, was really cool. Like, she was a really cool-looking character, and she had this really long red hair that animated really well. Mm-hmm. And you had, like, a secondary character that would, like, I think you could take control of her, and, like, there were sniping missions, like, different stuff you could do. Like, you would get up, like, and she, obviously, she didn't have a gun. She had a bow and arrow or a crossbow or something. It's been a long time since I played.
Well, they put her in the PlayStation All-Stars game, huh?
Yeah.
Voiced by Jennifer Hale.
Very cool game, though. Very, very cool.
Yeah, I know this is one of the, this is one of the ones. People liked it. I mean, yeah, the only
Tiff
real
and I played
gripe,
it together.
I remember a lot of people saying at the time their gripe was that it was too short, but
it was
honestly,
very
that
short.
Kind of stuff really doesn't bother me. If the game is good, I don't care if it's short.
Right. I believe it was something that we beat in like 4 or 5 hours, mm-hmm. something like that. I mean, it looked great, though. Like, it looked really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
I really
over a million
this
copies.
Game.
It's one of those weird situations. Like, typically speaking, in the video game industry, if a game is successful, there will be a sequel. If it's even moderately successful, somebody's going to make a sequel to it. Which right. is, I mean, there's so few cases of that not happening. And this is one of those weird instances where it's like, they just never made a Heavenly Sword 2. And
Sony does that, though. Like,
they do.
The fact that there has never been a sequel to The Legend of Dragoon is
that's
really
another one.
Weird.
They even made a sequel to, what is it, Rise of the Kasai?
Mark yeah,
of Kree.
That was, Mark of the yeah, Kree was the first one.
Was the first one. They made a sequel to that.
I adore those games
they,
so much.
They've got some intellectual properties, and they tend to just let them sit.
Yeah, and maybe somebody will touch it again. I mean, she's a very cool character. She animated really well. She looked really cool. There were some really cool set pieces in it. Like, the voice acting was good. It was just a very good, big-budget action game that was a little short.
Hmm. All right. Well, Heavenly yeah. Sword. Yay.
I dig it.
Next on their list is Skate for Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3.
Another game I really
liked. Came out 10 years ago
this
month. Never played it.
It's realistic versus
yeah,
Tony
it was
Hawk.
Like kind of the real is sold as billed as the realistic approach to Tony Hawk.
Yeah,
because this was when the Tony Hawk decline was in full effect.
Right. Yeah, about 10 years ago, because we had gotten American Wasteland and Underground 2 and mm-hmm. all the different weird shit that they started doing, and Neversoft never
you
made
should
the game
totally
look
annualize
good.
Skateboarding games. Great plan.
Well, for a while it was fine because there were new courses and there was fun stuff to do, but like the game, it never progressed visually enough. Like, it was always ugly. Like, in the characters, when you got off the board, everybody animated really awkwardly, and then Skate came out and it was just skateboarding, and like, you did the tricks with the analog stick. Like, this is when EA first started really falling in love with, we're going to do moves on the right analog stick, and there's shit you can do in hockey now in the NHL games. Like, you can do deke moves with your fucking, you know, as you're skating down the ice with the right analog stick. And, you know, they did the big hit stick in Madden and all that shit. You know, all of that stuff started coming around. And then in Skate, you did a kickflip by doing like a fireball motion or something like that. I didn't like it as much as Tony Hawk. It's good, and it always looked really good.
Yeah, it did look really nice. It was one of those things that I always respected but didn't really care enough mm-hmm. about. Speaking of stuff I don't care about, Eternal Sonata came out for Xbox 360 10 years ago.
It did. Did anybody care? I don't know.
I think there was like a handful of people that cared. See, this was part of Xbox's, Microsoft's big push to try to become successful in Japan. They're right. Like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get a bunch of exclusive RPGs on our system, like JRPGs, and we're gonna push it that way. And they did Eternal Sonata, Blue Dragon, and Lost Odyssey.
Right.
And Blue Dragon was the laziest Akira Toriyama artwork anyone's ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Akira Toriyama is a captain same face, but this was like so far beneath anything he had done in years. Right. This is the laziest artwork I've ever seen. Blue Dragon never really stuck with me. Lost Odyssey looked pretty cool, and I heard it was pretty good. But yeah. Eternal Sonata was like, the J in JRPG was as capital as it could possibly be, and it was all just these pastel colors and very saccharine and kind of music-y. And
look, people liked this game, though, right?
The people that liked this game liked this game, but I am not enough of a JRPG guy to have dove into this one. I don't think it sold well.
I don't know. Like, again, this is one of those things where at the time these things were coming out, like, there just wasn't time
to do this. And not only that, it was also kind of unique because no one was making RPGs on platforms anymore except for Square farting out Final Fantasies because Square set the bar so high for production values that once we were in this, you know, Microsoft jumps the gun and gets us all into the HD era about, you know, 2 years earlier than anyone should have. And now games cost so much more to make, and people have this certain expectation of what games are supposed to look like now. Right. And so making a giant RPG that are up to those visual standards became this insanely expensive proposition, which is why you started to get stuff like Last Story and Xenoblade Chronicles showing up on the Wii, because they're like, shit, we don't have to develop an HD, so we're just going to put games here. This was such a weird time in gaming, and I'm trying to look at how this game sold.
It did get a PlayStation 3 follow-up, like expansion.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Which probably, I would have to imagine, sold better than it did. Like, this, what really bugged me about that was it was just such kind of a slap in the face. You know what I mean? Microsoft was like, what's the most stereotypical shit we can do? I know. Fucking make a bunch of half-assed JRPGs. That's the ticket. That'll break us big in Japan. And it just didn't.
Total sales, according to VG Charts, which is... I'm told this site isn't 100% reliable, but I don't really know where else to go to check numbers.
Right, where the fuck else are we looking?
According to VG Charts, the Xbox 360 version sold 0.19 million in America. So
190,000 copies?
Yeah, 190,000 copies, 40,000 copies in Europe, 80,000 in Japan, 20,000 in the rest of the world. So let's see, globally... It sold 320,000 in Japan. Globally, it sold 320,000 on 360 and 440,000 on PS3. So yeah, the PS3 port a year later outsold 361.
And still didn't break a million copies.
Yeah, 0.76, 760,000 approximately total.
Right. Which, I mean, it's kind of weird because, like, video game sales numbers are like 760,000 doesn't sound all that impressive when you consider how many people play video games in the world. But it's still not, it's not awful, but to combine that over the two systems, you know, like it's, I don't know.
Comparatively speaking, let's see. Just out of curiosity, I just looked up the Last Story for Wii. That sold was only released on one platform, the Wii, and it sold... Wow, definitely outsold it in North America. It sold 310,000 copies in North America. So it sold 0.66 million worldwide. So that was neat. What about the other Xbox 360 ones? Blue Dragon. This is good entertainment right here.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, but we're comparing it, like, I'm looking at the list of the top...
Blue Dragon outsold it.
the top 50 selling video games of all time. Brain Age 2 sold 14 million copies.
Yeah, well, Brain Age 2 was also like $20.
Well, but you see what I'm saying, like Brain Age 2 that was on the DS versus a big RPG from Bandai Namco on the PS3 and the Xbox 360 didn't break a million.
Yeah.
Brain Age 2 sold 14 million. That's significant.
That is definitely significant.
That's not great. It's not great. 700,000 is not great.
Let's see, where's Wii Play? Wii Play is still chilling at globally 28.92 million copies.
Yeah, which, like, that's insane.
It's because people are buying a controller.
Right, which is fine. Whatever.
It's fine, yeah. All right, we've spent enough time on Eternal Sonata.
Yeah.
Let's get to a game I like.
Worst game ever, I think we can safely say.
Sonic Rush Adventure on DS. I love this game.
Do you? Again, I really not do. One I played.
This
not,
is a...
You know I'm not a Sonic fan.
It's... this was, I thought, a very clever way to handle 2D Sonic.
Uh-huh.
It had a lot of actual platforming in it and some exploration, just like the old Sonic games on Genesis, but it introduced this rush mechanic where, you know, one of the things that happens in Sonic is you're running along and then all of a sudden something jumps out in front of you and you have to either stop or you get hit.
Right.
What this does is it introduced this dash move, the rush move, where you just press a button and he, you know, pounds through something.
Shoulder tackles?
Kind of shoulder tackles. But you don't have infinite of that. Like,
sure.
It's all based on a meter, so you can rush as long as you have this meter, and then you fill it back up by doing stunts when you're flying through the air. So, like, it introduced this whole trick system where, like, you know, you do a Sonic thing and you're running super, super fast, then, like, a ramp shows up and you're flying through the air. You just start pounding buttons and Sonic will start doing these tricks and it builds up this rush meter. And it was really clever.
Kind of like SSX almost?
Yeah, exactly. SSX, except in an action platformer with ridiculously cool music. This is Rush Adventure. Sonic Rush was the one that pioneered that. Adventure was the sequel to it that started adding some other stuff to it. It was not quite as good as the first one, but it was still really good. And it had some great music in it, too. But it also introduced, like, it fell into some of the traps of Sonic stuff that I don't care for, like storyline and other characters and whatnot. And
yeah,
things getting kind of weird. And
just some of the weird shit that Sonic does every now and again, where you're like, what? It's a fucking hedgehog. Like, stop it.
Blaze the Cat isn't a terrible character, but it's
not a great name.
You don't need all those other characters. That's the thing. They kept expanding the Sonic universe with all these different characters and whatnot. And I don't know, man. Sonic, Tails, and Knuckles were pretty much it for me, and I think that's one of the reasons I like Sonic Mania so much. Is it's simple, and I think the Rush games were a really cool take on 2D Sonic, and they were handled extremely well. Very, very, very cool games. If you like old school Sonic, and you avoided it because they were coming out during the era where everything Sonic coming out was hot garbage, give them a try. It's a cool ass game.
All right.
Next one I'll mention.
Ringing endorsement.
Yeah,
ringing endorsement. Yeah.
Give it a whirl. This is Dewey's Adventure for the Wii, came out 10 years ago.
All right, explain Dewey's Adventure to me.
Dewey's Adventure is a super cool game. It's another one of those things that nobody bought. Man, I don't even remember who made this one. But
Konami.
I'm
looking at
Konami?
It. Yeah.
All right, this game stars a Dewdrop.
Sure.
And so you like, it's got all these like water based puzzles where like you are a drop of water and you like slide around and freeze things and turn into mist and whatnot. It's just a really clever little adventure game. I played like 15 minutes of it and I thought it was really cool.
Adorable.
Yeah, they even made like plushies of him and whatnot.
Yeah, I'm looking at the plush right now. This Dewey's Adventure.
It was a cool plush pre-order bonus thing.
Like he's a cute little raindrop.
I see
him sliding on a rainbow here. That's kind of cute.
He was cool, man. I really liked it. This was from a dev team that this was Konami. Was this the same people who did Elebits? I think it was.
Probably.
Because Elebits, yeah, it's the same team developed.
It looks similar, and
Elebis was another really, really cool Wii game. I loved Elebis.
The problem is, Elebis, I think, fell into the same trap that this falls into as well. It looks like shovelware.
Yeah, it kind of does.
Like, if you just look at the cover of this game, like, first image that pops up, you look at the cover, it looks like so many of the other shitty, shitty games that came out for the Wii that people bought and eventually soured them on the system.
Yeah. Elebis, I think, actually did pretty well because it got a sequel, but Elebis doesn't look like shovelware so much as Elebis just looks weird. Elebis is a hard sell. Like, if you look at the cover for Elebis, it's gorgeous. It's got this really, really gorgeous artwork. But
it's
Elebis
also
was,
a little Teletubby-ish.
Yeah, a little bit. But I mean, it's super pretty. It's super painted and whatnot. And yeah, I guess that guy looks kind of like a Teletubby. I never thought of that. But this game is so weird. This game is so weird. Like Dewey's Adventure, like you're a little dewdrop and you go around and do clever puzzles. Elebis, like, all right, so there's these little aliens that came to Earth and stole your electricity and you have to zap them to get things to turn on. It's like, it's really weird, but it's a really good game. Man, I wish they'd port this to something else. I would love
it. I mean, it looks like something that I'd be into. Like, I dig weird games, you know?
Yeah, it's like, this is right up your alley, actually, because it's all pointer control, so it's like, it's almost like a point and click adventure.
Out of my alley, then.
Well, no, it's not like, not like shaky motion control. It's more like a point and click adventure where, like, you have to, like the Monkey Island, where you're, like, trying to find, like, what can I interact with kind of a thing.
Right.
That's kind of what this whole game is about. It's like, just, I want to see if I can move this pot, and there's three elements under there, and I'll zap them kind of a thing. It's really wild.
Sneaky fuckers.
They're sneaky little fuckers. And this did get a sequel, I think, on the DS.
It did. Adventures of, I just passed it.
Kai and Zero. Yeah, but they changed things up a lot on that one. See, the original Elebis is a first-person thing, and it's just like, you know, it's really weird, Mr. Mosquito-esque. Just, you're traveling around a house and just finding these things. And then they kind of turn into an adventure game for this sequel. So
yeah,
I never played the sequel, but I loved the original one, but getting back to Dewey's Adventure, cool ass, interesting game on Wii. It's not the most impressively put together thing in the history of mankind, but it's a really interesting game, and I'm sure it's dirt cheap nowadays, because it's not like it has some sort of like large following or anything. It's
probably the most expensive Wii game.
Yeah.
It is the fucking Little Samson of Nintendo Wii.
I'm curious now. Dewey's Adventure. Let me find this game on Amazon.
It's either going to be $3 or $6,000.
You can buy it new for $22.79 or used for $4.99. So
there you go.
Bargain bin.
$4.99.
Totally hunt this thing down. Give this game a whirl. Same with Elebis. There were a handful of really, really creative, really interesting Wii games that nobody bought because they weren't Wii Sports.
Because they didn't come with another controller, Chris.
Come with another controller, and they weren't Wii Bowling. moving on, My Sims.
You can have them.
Yep. I never got into Sims in the first place.
I just don't get it.
This was like the Nintendo exclusive flavored Sims. So it was like DS and Wii exclusive My Sims. I didn't care.
And somehow, like, my niece is 12, I think, right now. She's almost a teenager. She babysat for us a couple weeks ago, and her fee for babysitting was for us to get her some Sims expansion packs for, like, whatever the current fucking version of The Sims is. This is still a thing that people like. I just don't get it.
I love SimCity, but Sims ain't for me, and My Sims was... They were cute character designs, but the thing was is that they were kind of going up against Mii's. Mii's already existed, and then EA creates these My Sims,
right,
which are kind of like Mii's, but not. It's, I don't know. Wii was such a weird architecture for third parties, and this was, I think, a pretty successful game, but obviously it's not still a thing. So
right.
My Sims. How did you sell, huh? This is all probably stuff much, I should do before we record the show. Wow,
really,
the DS version sold like stupid. 3.6 million.
Wow. And yeah, see, like, I feel like in our show notes, little inside baseball here. Maybe you should be including Mr. Producer Man, Mr. Editor in Chief. Maybe we should be having these sales numbers right next to it, cut down on some of this puffery.
Yeah, that requires me doing work.
Stone Age Gamer, your home for puffery.
Yeah, the let's see, My Sims, the Wii version only sold 1.6 million, but even then, only 1.6 million, that's right. Still a lot, like, sold over a million copies.
It sold more than fucking Eternal Sonata combined.
Sure so, did.
You know, they're, it's got that going for it.
All right, and the last thing from 10 years ago we're going to talk about was 10 years ago this month, we got Halo 3.
Which is a game that exists.
It sure is.
I never really got into Halo. I didn't either.
I tried.
I respect that it's good.
I guess I respect that it's good at what it does, but I feel
never
like
thought it was as good as everybody thought it was.
I guess the multiplayer must be it, because the single player, because multiplayer first person shooters don't do anything for me because I suck at them.
Right.
So I tried giving the single player a shot, and the game was, it was too goofy to be serious and too serious to be goofy. It was like,
yeah.
I'm like, okay, I'm taking this seriously. I'm going around, and then all of a sudden, these little grunt things start going. Like, what the hell is this? I don't get it, and I haven't been able to go back. However, there were some great commercials for the Halo franchise, and this game in particular. Oh man, remember that live action commercial for this? I think it was during the Super Bowl or something.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit. I still get chills watching that commercial. When he wakes up in the desert or whatever, and he throws that grenade, the bubble shield down. Oh, my God. It's so good.
everybody saw that and thought a live-action Halo movie would be a good idea. And then it never happened because never they realized happened. That fucking no, it wouldn't, because the story is shit.
And the music is stupid good in this commercial.
There's an aesthetic,
like, I can't
though.
Speak for the game, but...
Yeah, there's an aesthetic about the Halo games that I don't care for. I think I talked about it, too, when we first started talking about Destiny, like, many, many episodes ago. Like, there's just an aesthetic that those games have that I just don't care for.
Master Chief is such a generic design. Like, he's Samus Light.
Yeah, he really is.
And his name is ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know. It is very good at what it does, just what it did. Like, I enjoy, and I don't know if it's blasphemy or whatever, because I'm just not really that big into that community. But, like, I always enjoyed the Call of Duty multiplayer way more than the Halo multiplayer. You know, up until the point where the Call of Duty multiplayers ended up being hacked and were unplayable. But I just always had way more fun playing those than ever playing through Halo. I feel like Halo kind of coasted on the fact that it was like from the very first Halo of like, oh, we can do LAN parties with these and they're cool and it's fun and it's a new thing that we can do. And then, you know, it's the first big console multiplayer shooter that is online with Xbox Live. And I feel like it always just kind of coasted on that as opposed to being legitimately great. I don't know.
It's clearly just not for me, you know. Like,
yeah.
There's something to it because that many people can be wrong and frequently are. But
right.
There are people
SOCOM
that I've watched people actually have fun with this game. I've seen it with my own eyes. So like I lived in a house where there was a Halo LAN party and people were having a freaking blast. I was in one of them. But I watched it happen, and I was like, I can't not respect this, because this is cool. Live the dream,
you
guys.
You do you, boo.
All right, we're going to take ourselves a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the games that came out 20 and 30 years ago. You're listening to the Stone Age Gamer podcast from Geekade.com. Stick around. And now, here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com.
First up, these days, We have a lot of devices and a lot of different ways to connect them, but no one way that works to connect everything all the ways that you want them to. But what if there was something? The end-all, be-all for charging and transferring data across all devices. Is USB-C the answer? Sort of. Geekage Matt Much gets into the ins, outs, ups, and downs of this up and coming technology in the wild world of USB-C.
I love it when Matt Much writes articles for the website, because he sends them to me and he's like, I wrote something. It might be terrible, but
and it never is.
And it never is.
It like, never is.
I'm reading this thing like, it's freaking long, and I'm reading like, this is fascinating. Mm-hmm. This is just fascinating to me.
I really just, can we just get on wireless fucking charging for every, can we just get on wireless for everything? There's no more wires. Stupid. We've put a man on the moon, Chris. We've put a man on the moon.
With wires.
That was the problem. That's why he's still there. We never got them off the moon. That's why he died on the moon.
On the moon. Stupid moon men and their wires.
And their dumb wires anchoring them to their spaceships.
Anyway, then, have you ever had a beer that tastes so good it makes you stop and appreciate it right there and then?
Yes.
Dan has.
I have.
He has. In this month's Bits and Brews, he gets into why lactose enhances a porter from a brewery in Ocean, New Jersey. He also explains why this beer pairs so well with a lesser-known run-and-gun game title for the NES. Check out Bits and Brews, Kane Morning Bell, and Journey to Silius.
Do you like that one? I wrote that one for you.
I did like it.
I thought you might.
I have not played through Journey to Silius.
Son of a bit. Really good.
I know I should. I've played a little bit of it. I don't have a copy of the game, like a cart.
Right.
Now I have ways of playing it. I just haven't gotten around to it. But
we're putting that Silius next summer series.
Most definitely.
Happening. Rig the vote. Gerrymander the fuck out of these districts. Finally, speaking of future technology, lots of it was on display at the World's Fair Nano in Brooklyn last weekend. How do skateboards with drive belts work? How much of a caffeine punch does chewable coffee pack? Is Soylent Green really made of people? It's people! Find out about all these and much more in World's Fair Nano, located in the think tank.
Yo, I didn't even know this was a thing.
Me neither. That's how how fucking far the mighty have fallen.
Gabby usually writes about tech for the website,
right.
And she contacts me and says, like, all right, so I'm not going to do one of my regular articles this month because I'm gonna go to the World's Fair Nano and I want to write about that. I'm like, what the fuck's World's Fair Nano? And she's like, oh, it's this really cool. It's like a technology thing, like the World's Fair. I'm like, I didn't even know it was a thing. Please write about that.
It's like
she's like
tiny
asking
World's
me permission
Fair.
To write about this for the site. I'm like, no, please. You don't have to ask permission. Shit, give me that tomorrow.
Right.
It was mad interesting too.
I want to go.
And she was all about that chewable coffee.
Who wouldn't be? That sounds awesome.
Anyway, you can catch all this great stuff plus tons of other articles, videos, podcasts, and more right now at geekade.com. We're back. We have a stupid number of games to still talk about, and it's getting late, so we're going to try and rapid fire the crap out of this. It's
thankfully,
not going to work because Dan and I...
None of these games are big at all. None
yeah,
of these
thankfully,
were important.
Not a single one. Not a single one of these is Final Fantasy VII.
Right. Not one of these is Mega Man X4 or Marvel Super Heroes. Son of a bitch. Let's do it, Chris.
All right. First on the list, I've got Marvel Super Heroes. We don't have to say a ton about it because we're just talking about the PlayStation and Saturn ports.
Which were awesome.
Tolerable.
They were awesome. It was
the Saturn port was awesome. The PlayStation ports of these games were kind of subpar, but
they really were. They were really pushing that system pretty hard. But this game was so fucking fun.
Yeah.
And like what was awesome about this, see, the internet, as much as I love it, and I really, really do, it ruins a lot of things for people. Like, back in the day, not everybody read the magazines, and not a lot of arcade games got magazine coverage. So you would walk into an arcade, and oh, what the fuck is that over there? Is that a Marvel Superheroes fighting game made by Capcom? And it's fucking dope? Yes, this is what I'm doing. This is where I'm coming every weekend from now on. It's that, fucking well, awesome.
That was a little different for me. I remember, because I played the shit out of X-Men Children of the Atom, which was the first of these games. Like, I played the shit out of that game because I was obsessed with X-Men. I loved the cartoon. I loved the fact that they used the cartoon voice actors in the game.
I loved the
look, the animation. Everything was just spectacular. And then I walk into an arcade, and not only is it a sequel to Children of the Atom that's got some of the X-Men characters in it, plus all these other Marvel characters and shit like Iron Man and Spider-Man. It looks amazing.
Shield Smash.
All those characters.
I love that from back in those games.
Stars and Stripes. All those characters, all those Marvel characters that I love, drawn in the same gorgeous art style as Street Fighter Alpha.
It's beautiful.
Which is where this is all come out. Well, no, as Children of the Atom, then Alpha. Mm-hmm. Regardless, this art style was great. And then you plunk in a quarter and you realize that it's got the fucking Infinity Gems in it. And you're just like, oh my God, Infinity Gems. Yes. And they have like effects on your characters and stuff. And I was so jazzed for Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite to bring back that system. And then...
it looked like it did.
It looked like it did.
It's out. Are people liking it?
That's the thing. So I've been reading a bunch of reviews on it. Apparently, as a fighting game, like, it's really good. Like, they put a lot of effort into the actual gameplay mechanics of it to kind of move things along. Like, they pulled it back to a two-person tag team.
Right.
And
which is awesome.
It's kind of a bold play for Marvel vs. Capcom because it's always been, you know, bigger, better. Right. And, really, the big complaints are, like, the character roster is, like, it's the Marvel Cinematic Universe versus Capcom.
Well, what do you expect at this point? I mean, like, really, though, we're not getting deep cuts right now.
But we did.
Not gonna happen.
Like, Marvel vs. Capcom 3 had freaking MODOK as a playable character.
You're right.
And like, it's just kind of a step back in that direction. And the art direction is hideous in this game.
It's so ugly.
I cannot wrap my head around what went so wrong here.
Like, but Marvel versus Capcom 2 or Marvel Super Heroes.
Yeah.
Shuma Gorath was in this one, right?
Yeah.
And this is the first Shuma Gorath.
Yep.
Which is amazing.
There's your deep cut right there. Oh, Shuma Gorath and Blackheart. And
oh, Blackheart was so awesome in this game too. So good. I fucking love this game.
Yeah, I love this game too. This was a lot of fun. And the Saturn port was pretty great.
That's right.
So
Find a way to play it. It's excellent.
Definitely.
Go to your local arcade.
Go to your local arcade and ask them where the fuck this game went.
My diner still actually has a copy of this.
Really?
Like, the diner in my town has a copy of Marvel vs. Superheroes and I think the Predator Aliens Light Gun game, like, in their lobby, along with one of those fucking great Zambini, like, give me a quarter, I'll read your palm. That guy, fortunes for a quarter. I love quarters.
I love the progression of these games. It's like X-Men, cool. Marvel Universe, even cooler. X-Men versus Street Fighter. Awesome,
very
I'm in.
Cool.
You thought that was cool? Marvel Superheroes versus Street Fighter. And you're like, all right, this is great. Then where do you go from here? Marvel versus Capcom. And I'm like, oh, shit. The first time you saw Marvel vs. Capcom, you're like, is that Captain Commando? Shit, that's Captain Commando.
I'm so stoked. I can't wait to do the three-player move of Iron Man, Cyclops, and Cable. It's going to be fucking great.
Just
particles everywhere.
All right. September 1997, Final Fantasy VII came out.
Nobody gave a shit.
Nobody cared. We have talked extensively about this game on the show, so let's not delve too deep into it. But it is important to say Final Fantasy VII came out. Actually changed the gaming landscape.
It really did. It cannot be understated how important this game was.
Yeah. It is not my favorite Final Fantasy game, but it is just such a damn important game, and I'm glad it exists.
Me too. It was one of those games, like, There's certain things in life that just become ubiquitous. Like, I don't care what type of music you like, everybody likes Bob Marley's Legend. You know, Bob Marley's greatest hits, like, that never comes on and you're like, eh. Like, nobody hears Three Little Birds and they're like, this is fucking bullshit, turn this off. You know what I mean? Like, it's just...
Well,
it's,
this blows.
This sucks. Oh, God. You know, Final Fantasy VII kind of became that for video games. Like, even if you're not an RPG guy or gal, as it were, everybody fucking played Final Fantasy VII. This is one of those games that just everybody played and is kind
everybody
of
talked about, you know, you just
universally liked.
Yeah, it's just a solid game. It's good at what it does. And
right. It is inarguably a great game.
I am nervous about the remake.
Oh, I'm fucking so scared of it.
It seems
to be going
in a strange direction.
Of course
and
it is.
You know what? This is one of those games. I bet I would love to see a port of this come to Switch. Because I might play through it if it was like
it might.
Easily accessible portably for me. You know, if I could pick away at it the way I picked at Zelda,
right?
I'd probably finally get through this game. I mean, look, Cloud
it's
was
so
in Smash
it.
Brothers, so anything's possible.
He's also in Puzzle and Dragons, so you know
he's a whore.
I've got him. He's awesome. I just pulled Lightning last week too, which is pretty cool. Anyway.
Speaking of pretty cool, next game on the list, Oddworld Abe's Odyssey came out in September of 1997.
I should like these games more than I do. I don't love them.
I love the world of these games. And
I love the look of them.
Yeah,
I love the lore, I love
the characters. I played through a lot of Abe's Odyssey. I just wasn't great at it.
Right.
But I had a friend at the time, Chris, who was really good at it. And so I'd play it with him a lot. And watch him find all the secrets and shit. And this is like one of the coolest games to watch a playthrough of. It's just so neat. And the world of this is great. Abe's Exodus was cool. Munch's Odyssey was... I didn't get that one at all.
Right.
And it's like this
and
is one of those
Stranger's
things.
And then Stranger's Wrath came out. And it was like...
And now it's a first-person shooter? What? That's the thing. Like, this was supposed to be this whole five-pronged thing. And we're going to be these different characters and their different Odysseys. And then it just kept getting pulled back and pulled back because, you know, shit just kept getting weirder. And having Munch's Odyssey be an Xbox exclusive, I think, was a real death blow for this franchise.
Yeah.
I don't know how New and Tasty did because they remade this and put it on a bunch of platforms. And
I believe it's a game that I got for free. I think it was a PS Plus game that I never played. I mean, it looked good, but there's just something about them that doesn't sit right with me. I don't know.
It's a very unique game. Like, I've never really played anything like it before. It's very deliberate platforming. It's not really a platformer. It's just like, no, I can't say I've never played anything like it. It almost reminds me a bit of like Flashback.
Flashback or like the original Prince of Persia?
Original Prince of Persia. Yeah, that kind of stuff. And they're... Mm-hmm. Really, it's a very, very deliberate game. It's very easy to die, and it's hard, but it's got so many neat things you can do in it, and it looks and sounds amazing.
Yeah.
And
I feel very similarly
to
like Fallout. I feel like I should like this way more than I do. Just can't get into it.
Well, the Oddworld games to me, I think, are fantastic. I should play more of them. And maybe I'll get New and Tasty if it shows up on Switch someday. I know it came out on Wii U late.
Yeah.
And I think they got kind of burned with Nintendo on that one. And it was, I feel like the company, the Oddworld Inhabitants has a very weird track record with, being pissed at people for their games not selling better.
Right. Well, and they're EA now.
Oh, are they?
I think they're owned by EA.
Nice nurse's uniform. These are OR scrubs. Oh, are they? Anyway. So next on the list, Mega Man X4 came out. That was pretty cool.
I like the X games. It's Mega Man. We've talked about Mega Man. We've covered Mega Man. It's not Elmer Fudd.
You know
what?
You
Mega
don't
Man.
Like the X games because you don't like X2, and neither do I because it's
well, that's
garbage.
True. X2 sucks. But I like the X games after that. Like, I like the PlayStation 1s.
Yeah, the PlayStation ones were pretty cool. I always felt like they didn't feel... Mega Man X 1 puts just, it was such a high mark, and none of them have ever compared to that to me. But once they hit PlayStation, it was really neat. Except X 6, I think, felt cheap.
They looked really good.
Yeah, this one I had on Saturn. Cartoony. Eventually got it on PlayStation.
Right.
Cool ass game. Love Mega Man X 4.
Yeah.
Let's see. Croc came out on PlayStation and Saturn.
It's a game I'm surprised didn't get bigger.
I feel like that did pretty well for itself. I know it got a sequel.
Legend of the Gobos, I believe.
Yeah.
Something like
I think the Legend of the Gobos was the first one.
Was it? Okay.
Croc 2, Electric Boogaloo. Oh, Croc 2 was just called Croc 2. Yeah, the first one sold on PlayStation, sold 3.5 million copies.
Yeah, it was a cute little accessible platformer.
Damn, and then the second one sold less than 1 million.
Ooh.
0.73. Wow.
It wasn't... There was a time, like, when all these games were coming out that you had Crash Bandicoot, and you had Spyro, and you had Blasto, and you had fucking Croc, and the Frogger platformer, and there were just all of these sort of 3D mascot games that if you didn't really stand out, like if you weren't Spyro... You just kind of fell to the wayside.
Yeah, and like obviously the first one did really well for itself, but I think people were just not interested in platformers by the time Croc 2 came out.
Right, unless it was Spyro. Like,
or Banjo.
Or Banjo. Yeah, like there was a couple of them that really stuck around. You know, like Medieval didn't get a follow-up and didn't get the following that it should. Medieval's fucking awesome.
There wasn't a Medieval 2? I thought there was a Medieval 2.
I think it was for Vita, though. Or not Vita, for PSP, maybe. I could be wrong.
There was a remaster of the first Medieval on Medieval 2 came out in 2000 on PlayStation, and then there was like a remaster of the first one on PSP, but that was it. They had Medieval 1 and 2 and then it stopped.
Again, something that feels kind of like what we were talking about earlier with Heavenly Sword, something that feels like it should be much bigger than it is.
Yeah, and that has its cult following, but
cuz it's awesome. Sir Daniel Fortescue is
Neither of them sold more than 1 million. Oh, well, there's your explanation. Jeez. Oh,
there you go.
The first Medieval sold 830,000 copies. It's respectable.
Wow. That is.
That's respectable. Medieval 2, though, sold 380,000 copies.
Jeez.
That's low. That's what happened to the Medieval franchise. Nobody bought Medieval 2.
Nobody bought it.
Same thing happened to Croc. Look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Bushido Blade came out.
Mm.
Bushido Blade was cool, man.
I fucking love Bushido Blade. I used to go over to my buddy Murph's house, and we would play the shit out of Bushido Blade.
Like, yeah, I loved listening to people talk about this game. He loved customers that would come back pissed that they bought this game. They'd walk back into my Funko Land and be like, yo, this game sucks, man. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, they're one-hit kills. I'm like, yeah, because you're fighting with a sword. If you slice somebody in the gut, the fight's over.
Yeah, that's the that's end the of point. That.
Like, this is a realistic sword-fighting game. You want to slice somebody, they're fucking dead. And they're like, I wanted Soul Blade. I'm like, well, then you should have bought Soul Blade, because that game's awesome too, but this is a different animal.
It's so good. And like the multi-level... Or the multi-plane fighting was really cool. There was that, like, I loved the draw distance in this game. Like, you could just get so far back, and like it, for the time, it actually looked pretty cool.
Yeah,
you know, like it's still blocky as shit, but the characters animated really well, and their fighting styles all kind of meshed really well together. It was a fucking great game.
Absolutely, yeah.
Bushido and the sequel was really good too.
I never played the second one.
I really enjoyed that one, too. This is another thing that I would love to see come back.
Agreed. This should come back. I definitely agree with that. I concur with that statement, good sir.
As well you should. Very smart.
Duke Nukem 3D.
Yay. I never really loved the Duke Nukem games.
Me neither. I was so much more of a Doom guy. Yeah. I love Doom, and Duke Nukem was just like, all right, this is kind of funny, but I'd rather play Doom.
Yeah, like, I love Evil Dead. You know, and like the Evil Dead franchise, which is what I feel like Duke Nukem is the equivalent of in video games.
Like, it's just
not as funny as it thinks it is. It's a little too self-aware.
Yeah. It's not terrible, but I mean, it's not a great game. But
it's not as funny as it thinks it is. It's too self-aware without being charming enough.
Word.
Like, that's where Evil Dead gets it right, is that Bruce Campbell is just so fucking charming that the ridiculousness of it is okay. You can, like, you can get through it because, like, there's just this level of charm and love that's there, whereas Duke Nukem was just like, tits and dick jokes. Awesome. Look,
there's strippers in this video.
Yeah, game. It's so fucking cool. Look at me. I'm so aggro.
Whatever.
Shut it, Duke Nukem.
Next on the list was Frogger for PlayStation. I freaking love this game.
Now, was this the platformer?
No, this was the one that was basically a modern version of the original Frogger.
Right.
Which so this was awesome. Before they turned, you know, the Frogger character into like a character that's an anthropomorphic frog who runs on his feet and jumps on platforms and wears a backpack.
Naturally.
This was Frogger. You were a fucking frog, like with a
like just Kermit.
This expression, this personality free expression on his face, other than like, I'm terrified of everything around me. And it just makes this
determination not to die.
This game was great because it starts off with the retro levels, which is just Frogger. Mm-hmm. And so you're playing Frogger with polygonal graphics, and then it just takes that whole formula and turns it into this whole big thing. It was basically the Frogger equivalent of Donkey Kong on Game Boy, whereas like you just start off playing Donkey Kong and then it just turns into this whole other thing. And it was brilliant. Like, you could jump up to different levels. You still moved by just tapping a direction and the frog jumps one square. You know, it's all just this still grid-based movement, but it's so good. And the music was awesome. I can't recommend this enough. Frogger on PlayStation 1 is incredible.
It is very, very good.
I wish I was playing it right now. Next up, Intelligent Cube.
Cube?
Intelligent Cube.
I love this game.
This was a game I never played.
Really?
I never got a copy of it.
Oh, yeah,
it would never stay in the store long enough. And then like this game was copies. So sought after, and I could never get my hands on it.
I love this game. I think it's really great. I don't understand why it was so sought after. Like, it's not that either. Good.
It had this weird cult following to it. And it got a sequel, too, right?
Yes.
Intelligenter Cube?
Intelligenter. It's really good. It's really fun. It's a really fun puzzle game. I don't get the huge draw to like the cult following. I don't really understand because, you know, like I said, it's good.
Wow. Not
great. But
according to Wikipedia, in 1999, a sequel to IQ Intelligent Cube was released known as Kurushi Final Mental Blocks. Yes.
it's cool. It did 3D in a really nice way.
Yeah, it's just like this cool 3D puzzle game.
Yeah.
Like, neat.
It's fun.
I'd like to play this someday. I should get around to doing that.
I bet there's countless clones of it on the internet now.
Yeah. Rampage World Tour came out on the PlayStation. This game also made me extremely happy because I love the original Rampage.
How and could I you thought not?
World Tour was a great reinvention of that.
I think I like this one a lot.
This was the one that was still just George, Lizzie, and Ralph busting buildings. It wasn't all crazy polygonal. It had a cool art direction to it. And it added these like great, just, you know, you could climb up the buildings. Now you could kick them too, where you just like hold onto the buildings with your hands and just start smacking your feet into them.
Yes.
Get on top of them and start pounding them from above. And it was just cool. It was dumb fun, just like the original Rampage. It was wonderful. I feel like after this, it started getting out of control, where they were adding all kinds of weird-ass characters and shit to it. Like, there didn't need to be more sequels to it, because it's like, this is such a simple premise, and I feel like adding to it kind of pointed out how dumb it was in the first place.
Right. Don't try to make it like a thing that it's not. Just let it be.
Yeah,
it's
unlike fine. Altered Beast, the actual, like, underlying gameplay is sound. Yeah. Whereas the original Altered Beast is like this really cool concept that's actually not that fun to play. And then when they made that cool GBA sequel, it was like, well, actually, look at that. They made this game fun, but it's ugly as sin, and it's on the Game Boy Advance. Rampage World Tour had like kind of the opposite effect, where they were like, all right, now how do we take this in new directions? And I think they just weren't. I don't think they were good enough. The people who were making it were good enough at figuring that out to make it a more worthwhile game.
Yeah.
But World Tour, original World Tour in the arcade on PlayStation on N64, this specifically the PlayStation version came out 20 years ago this month, was just great. It was just awesome. Man, I should play that right now too. Anyway,
we should.
Moving on, Resident Evil Director's Cut.
It's good.
Yeah, it's good. It's Resident Evil, the first one, except, you know, I don't know. What the hell was the difference between that and the Director's Cut? This cell had, like, the...
I don't remember.
Master of Unlocking and stuff in it. I don't know. I've never been a Resident Evil fan. Until Resident Evil 4, I was not... Well, technically, until Code Veronica, I was never really a Resident Evil fan.
I love the first one.
The first one I bought.
I love it. It was just cool. I liked it a lot, you know. And I think the Director's Cut, maybe...
We're gonna do a segment on Resident Evil. Like
we will.
We're talking horror games all month next month, so we're gonna get to Resident Evil games.
I'm sure we will.
So let's just move
Resident
on
Evil 7.
To this masterpiece, Street Fighter EX plus Alpha for PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Oh, cool! They made a 3D Street Fighter game. Oh god, they made a Street. Oh god.
Yeah, the hype of like 3D. Like Virtua Fighter, but like with Street Fighter, yes. And then you played it and you went, oh, fuck, no.
This isn't good. This isn't good at all.
This is just not a... Ugh. What did they do?
I know this game's got its fans, but I'm not one of them. I did not care for this in the least. I was... What the hell happened to Street Fighter Cross Tekken, huh? What the hell happened to that? Tekken versus Street Fighter came out, or Street Fighter versus Tekken came out, or whichever one that was, and that was great. And then there was going to be the flip side of it, where they were doing a full the Street Fighter characters with Tekken mechanics, just like they did the Tekken characters with Street Fighter mechanics. And that was cool as shit. That was a really interesting game. I dug that game. It wasn't like this crazy masterpiece, but I thought it was a cool game. I was really, 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 really excited to see how they handled it, because the people who make Tekken, I'm not the biggest Tekken fan, but damn if I don't respect that they know how to make a good 3D fighting game. Like
they really do.
They do Tekken very well. They make cool-ass games. So I was really looking forward to seeing how they would handle the Street Fighter characters with Tekken gameplay mechanics, and then it just fucking disappeared. Street Fighter X plus Alpha sucks.
Anyway, it really does. Skullmania. Yeah.
Let's see. We only got two more things from this generation here. We've got Extreme G for Nintendo 64.
I don't know it.
It was the futuristic motorcycle racing game that wasn't F-Zero.
I know of it. I've never played it.
It was all right, but F-Zero X was way better. And this was before F-Zero X, if I'm not mistaken. And I was just, I remember this game coming out and being like, wow, this is pretty cool. It's just, I wish they'd make F-Zero for this. I'm gonna hold out for that. And then they eventually did, and it was freaking awesome. But, yeah, Extreme G was cool. And it's also worth noting that in September of 1997, the Tiger Gamecom came out, or Game.com, whatever the hell it is.
Game.com.
One of the best versions of Solitaire in existence is on the Gamecom.
You know how you keep, like... You keep downloading different versions of Solitaire to your iPhone, and you're like, it's just not what I want.
It's just not the Gamecom version.
It's just not the Game.com version. Game.com.bomb.com is what the fuck it was.
This thing, I'm pretty sure it's pronounced Gamecom, because I feel like that's how they said it in the commercials, which is silly, because it's not written that way.
No, it's not. It's not what you guys wrote, if you wanted me to say it that way.
Gamecom was a weird-ass system, man. They put a lot of weird licensed games on this that were not good.
No.
And this thing was huge. this thing was at least the size of the Wii U gamepad. And,
it was the size of a 70-inch television that you were supposed to fucking hold in your hands. Stupid.
The screen wasn't that big. It was very black and white. What a weird system. I have a handful of games for it.
Bad idea it was.
I bought it because I couldn't say no. It was so interesting. No. And I'm glad I have it. But
what'd you spend on it? Like $3?
I think I bought it when it was like $50 or something. Really? I don't know. I definitely spent some money on it because I was so interested in it.
$47 too much.
Yeah. We're going to do a Tiger Gamecom episode one of these days. Tiger RZone/Gamecom retrospective. It'll be great.
That's just going to be the pain in the ass-a-thon next year. Gamecom and RZone game. Nobody's going to watch. They're going to take money away from us.
That's what we're going to do. We're going to have to play games while also playing games on the RZone. You're going to have to play like something. We're going to have to do Wii games so you can play with one hand, and then the other hand is going to be playing the RZone strapped to your fucking face.
Oh, that sounds like the worst idea ever.
God, that thing's terrible.
I mean, I'll do it because, you know, charity, but it sounds like the worst idea.
This sounds like pain. All right, so now let's go back 30 years. 1987, Blades of Steel was released in the arcade. Yes. I have never played the arcade version of Blades of Steel.
No?
No.
It's good. The characters are just bigger. It's a little faster.
It's basically like Blades of Steel on NES, but yeah, bigger characters. Yeah, it's Blades of Steel. Right?
The same Double Dribble, I think, had an arcade version, too, that was just... It's the same fucking thing. You know, it's fun. It's Blades of Steel.
Like Blades of Steel, I played the shit out of this on NES.
Oh, it's just stupid hockey. It was great.
I absolutely love this game. And also had a really cool soundtrack, too. I'm looking at the arcade version. It looks almost exactly the same.
They're just bigger. They're just bigger sprites.
They're just bigger, a little more colorful. Yeah. Doesn't seem to be much more in the animation department. Like maybe one or two more frames, but...
Yeah.
For the most part, I wonder, does it sound as good as the NES game?
Back then, one or two more frames of animation 30 years ago meant a hell of a lot more than it does today.
Yeah. It's definitely got the same, announcer.
The same pissed his pants?
It's way more legendary and audible in this audible. One. You can hear what he's
intelligible.
Saying.
Intelligible.
And it's still face off.
Face off! Oh, it's fucking great.
Blades played of Steel so much awesome. Blades of Steel on NES.
It's
good. I'm sure I have this on my Raspberry Pi. I gotta try this. Maniac Mansion was released on the Commodore 64 and Apple II.
So good.
Classic.
I love Maniac Mansion. That game's awesome.
Let's see. Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Nobody cares about that.
Yeah, nobody cares.
I fucking love Mike.
Not
Tyson
to gloss over Maniac Mansion, but it's late and we're getting tired.
Well, and we spent a whole Halloween episode on that a couple years ago, I think.
I think so.
Go back through the archives.
Yeah, we definitely talked about Maniac Mansion, and I think we've spent some time talking Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. I'd like to do a Punch-Out retrospective on the show someday.
We did talk about how the characters are so fucking racist.
They are, but they're
not even racist. They're just stereotypically offensive. Yeah.
Hamster is doing the first arcade Punch-Out in their arcade archives for Switch as well, which I am super stoked for because I love the arcade Punch-Out games. I still haven't mastered them. And even though I've been playing those more than anything else since I got my Raspberry Pi, is playing Punch-Out and Super Punch-Out Arcade because I've always wanted to spend some quality time with those games because they're so different. They're so different.
Are.
And I adore Punch-Out, and it's fun to have a different flavor of it. And seeing all the early versions of characters like, friggin' Dragon Chan and Bear Hugger and whatnot.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite puzzle games.
It really is. It's all reaction time. It's not a boxing game.
Nope.
And Mike Tyson's Punch-Out on NES was like, that was the one that just launched this franchise into the stratosphere. And
I could really go for a new one. The Wii one was great.
The Wii one was so good.
It was so good. I could really go for a Switch one.
Me too. I could definitely stand to have a new Punch-Out. And like the series has done pretty well for itself. Yeah.
Like I'll bring mine, you know, I'll get a Switch, bring it over, like we'll both sit with our screens in front of us and play fucking Punch-Out. That sounds awesome.
I mean, it's definitely time for one. I mean, you had two arcade games followed by an NES game and then, you know, a Super Nintendo game and then nothing for N64, nothing for GameCube. And then it comes back on Switch, and it's like, yay! Sorry, on Wii. And it's like, yay, this game's fantastic. Yeah. Sold super well, too. But then we didn't get a sequel on Wii U. And now here we are on Switch, and I got my fingers crossed that they're going to throw another Punch-Out our way. Because as much as I loved Punch-Out on Wii, I was the only disappointment I have with that game is the only new character was Disco Kid. And like everything else was the entire cast of the NES game, which was cool.
Which
was
great.
Plus Aaron Ryan and Bear Hugger.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that, but I wanted to see more... I want to see more. I want to see some more new characters in the Punch-Out universe. I love their redesign of Little Mac and Doc. God, Doc Lewis was hysterical in that game.
He really was. I'm sure Arms is great, but I don't want Arms. I want a new Punch-Out.
Yeah, Arms is so totally different from Punch-Out.
But it's, I feel like it's kind of filling that hole.
It's definitely not. Arms is a fighting game. It's comparing Arms to Punch-Out is like when people were saying shit like Black and Bruise was like, oh, there's your new Punch-Out is Black and Bruise. Like, no, that's a shitty boxing game. Like,
right. That's your Arms new is Ring a, King.
Arms is a 3D fighter. Like,
nothing on That's Your New Ring King. I thought that would get a bigger.
Oh. Every time somebody mentions Ring King, I picture Richard Simmons giving blowjobs. But...
Well, that's funny.
Look it up, kids.
Yeah, it really is.
It's awesome. Unavoidable. Look up Richard Simmons, Ring King. Enjoy. You're welcome.
Do not look up Richard Simmons blowjobs. I mean, unless you're into that. And then look that up. I mean, I'm not judging. I really, whatever gets you off is great. But
yeah, I don't think Arms, I feel like Arms is such a different animal.
I'm just saying, like, on the outside looking in, not owning a Switch, like, it looks like Arms is filling that void. I mean, but we've talked about this a little bit before. Yeah. If they announced, like, oh, there's a new Punch-Out and a new pro wrestling coming for Switch, I would have one tomorrow.
You would actually already have one. You would.
Yeah, I would somehow be like, oh, it's been in the closet this whole time. That's weird. We've always been here.
I'm so excited for this. I've already bought it.
Yeah.
I was just talking to somebody about this. I wrote an article on Stone Age Gamer about just completely pointless Smash Brothers speculation for the non-existent new Smash Brothers games coming out on Switch. And I was speculating about Arms characters and whatnot. And somebody responded on the Facebook page saying that they need to have Starman and Fighter Hayabusa from Pro Wrestling. I was like, shit, man, you're so right. Those characters do need to be in there. And God, I wish I knew the story of why those characters haven't appeared anywhere else yet.
There's got to be something.
There's got to be licensing. There's got to be rights tied up somewhere with the Fire Pro people or whatever. But
figure it out, Reggie.
Yeah, figure it out. Make it happen. New Pro Wrestling game. Sticking with NES, we also got the original Rad Racer.
In 3D.
In 3D. I freaking love Rad Racer.
Really, really shitty 3D. I love Rad Racer too.
I remember being really confused because I played it at my cousin's house and they didn't have the 3D glasses. And I used to press select and be like, what is happening right now? I'm like, I think you can play it in 3D or something. Like, and I'm looking at it like, what is this?
This
why would
terrible.
Anyone play it this way?
Wasn't that a Squaresoft too?
Yeah.
Squaresoft. Final Fantasy and Rad Racer.
That's right. That was just back when they did all kinds of shit. They did this and 3D World Runner. Like, Square used to just be a regular old developer.
Yeah, but that game's terrible. Rad Racer's actually good.
Yeah, Rad Racer's freaking rad.
Man. It was just a really, really fun... it was like a modern, for the time, I guess, Pole Position.
Yeah, it was the closest you were getting to a proper Outrun game at home. Like,
yeah.
I feel like Rad Racer was better than Outrun on Master System. And
I would agree with that. I mean, I love Outrun, but...
I love the arcade Outrun, but Rad Racer was freaking awesome. Yeah. Didn't care a lot for Rad Racer 2.
Nobody
didn't,
did.
Didn't have the same feeling to it, but...
No.
Whatever. Original Rad Racer, freaking awesome game. Should be on a virtual console somewhere. How has that never been released? Holy shit, Square... It's Rad Racer. Everyone
Come
loves
on.
Rad Racer.
Get on.
It was in The Wizard, for crying out loud. It's the game that Lucas sucked at with the power glove.
So bad.
Can we talk about that for a quick second? He didn't even finish the first level.
I know.
And he's
Lucas
just like, turn
sucks.
Around, and Jimmy's all like, everyone's super impressed. I'm like, dude, give me a regular controller. I'll kick your ass in Rad Racer. I can beat the first
you.
Course, for crying out loud.
I beat Jesus. The first course with my eyes closed. I don't need this fucking stupid glove.
Power glove's awful.
It's so awesome.
Speaking of awful, we also got the original Street Fighter in the arcades. The
best game.
Street the Fighter 1 is just not good.
It's
Street
unplayable.
Fighter 1's important. It's a very important game, and I still don't know why it wasn't included in the Street Fighter Anniversary Collection.
Because
Remember
it's
that?
Unplayable.
Yeah, but it was the Street Fighter Anniversary Collection. It was celebrating the anniversary of Street Fighter. Not Street Fighter 2.
No, I know.
Street Fighter. And the game is like 50K or something like that.
I know.
Like, yes, it is an unplayable piece of crap, but it's important, and you should have included that in the Street Fighter Anniversary Collection, because if anyone's interesting, just from a historical perspective, it's an interesting game to play for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Like,
if you're wondering how Sagat got his scar.
if you want to look at Mike, who's totally a different character than Balrog.
Oh, absolutely. And totally a red-headed Ryu.
Oh, God.
It's
sandals.
So bad. Oh, my God. That game's fucking awful.
Yeah, it's really, really hard to play. I did, when there was a... Something had this on it. Some arcade collection did wind up having this on it on PlayStation, I think. And there was some way that I was playing it way back when, and I was playing a crap load of it at my Game Crazy just because I wanted to get good at it. I just wanted to beat that game. And
which is impossible. It's not a game dumb. That you can get good at.
And the original version had those pressure-sensitive buttons that everyone broke.
Oh, God, it's so dumb.
I've never even seen one of those, but it seemed like such a hysterical idea.
Oh, it's fucking hit goodness. This really hard and punch harder. Like, oh, like, yeah, that won't break.
That's not, yeah, that's a great idea, guys.
Oh, fucking stupid idea. It's almost as bad as that Fighting Street game. Ugh, that game sucked, too.
Good one.
That's a joke that, like, a few people got, but the few people who did get it are going, ha-ha, good joke.
Look it up, kids. Fighting Street.
Fighting Street. Sounds similar.
I didn't even realize this when I was mentioning it earlier. We also got Outrun on Master System.
Yeah. Rad Racer was better.
It was an okay point. It was an okay port. Rad Racer was better.
It was just hard because in the arcade, Outrun had the big console and the wheel and the sitting in the
and
thing.
It looked amazing.
And it looked awesome and it was really fast and it was really bright.
Was this Afterburner and Space Harrier? I had that just really distinct Sega arcade look and sound, and pouring into the Master System was just like, wow!
Well, it's there. The car is red, so that's good.
It functions, but
it kind of does a flippy do when you crash. It doesn't do like a real flippy do like the arcade, but it kind of flippy does.
Half of what made Outrun so cool was that it looked so cool.
It really did. The chick was super hot when you were 7. Like, ah, those are giant digital boobs. Great.
And finally,
we're not going to end on giant digital boobs. We got
to
go.
No, we got to go to Alpha Mission for NES. Alpha Love Mission. This game.
What the fuck is Alpha Mission? I know this.
It's an SNK top-down shooter.
Okay, I'm looking it up. Hold on. Say something. Say interesting things while I'm looking
I rented
it up.
This game from my local Captain Video back in the day. I rented this game several times because I loved it. It's just a really cool top-down shooter in space, and you got some cool weapons and power-ups that had good music. Repetitive, but good. Boss battles. It was, fairly generic, I guess, but it was just really cool at the time. I loved this game.
All top-down shooters back then were kind of generic, like Smash TV. Fucking generic as shit.
Yeah, Smash TV was awesome, dude.
It is awesome. I'm not saying it wasn't, but... Pretty
I don't know,
generic.
Man. Smash TV wasn't that generic. What else is like Smash TV besides Robotron?
A fucking...
it was Robotron with a sense of humor.
Fucking Running Man?
Was there a Running Man game?
I don't know. There's a movie. It's excellent. Fucking Dynamo rules.
All right, well, that'll be it.
I fucking love that movie. Fuck you. Running Man is incredible. That movie is so good. Okay,
my
I know
hurts
this one.
I'm dying. I need to go to bed.
This is good. I did this like Alpha Mission.
Yeah, Alpha Mission was a good time. All right, guys, where's the 10-20-30, and that's going to be our show. Join us next week when Dan and I will be kicking off our month-long look at horror-themed games as part of Geekade's 31 Days of Halloween. Once again, you can get in touch with us at malikgeekade.com. As well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram at Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter at @_Geekade. You can also find us individually on Twitter. I'm at Geekade Chris, that's Geekade KRIS, and Dan is at
Geekade Dan.
If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed here tonight, be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher, where if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. No, seriously, leave us a review. Nobody's reviewed our show in like a year. Yeah. Leave us an iTunes review. It'll be great.
Get on that.
Make us all super happy.
Chris and I can only come up with so many unique individual email addresses to fucking leave reviews for. It's getting tedious.
It is. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making this show listenable for all you folks. And we'd like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme. You can check him out on SoundCloud and Bandcamp or his website, which we have a link to in the show notes. Again, always remember to keep your eyes on geekade.com for where we post something new every single day. God damn it.
God darn it.
Gosh dang it. That's it, everybody.
That's right. We're going to have something every single day. Something awesome.
That's right.
31 days of
Halloween is going to be super fun.
Can we say it yet?
Yeah, sure.
Can we break the news here?
Let's break the news here.
Considering our single most popular thing ever on geekade.com is my reading of fucking Metal Gear, the Worlds of Power fucking novel.
It is the single most clicked on thing because it was mentioned in a much more popular YouTube video.
That's right. It gets the most traffic consistently because I had a good idea at a time, so we decided that we were going to record scary stories to tell in the dark, read by your favorite Geekade personalities. I just recorded my two chapters tonight for like a total of 6 minutes, I think it took to get through both of them. But we're going to post up a story from the original Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark book that if you are in your, I would have to imagine your late 20s to early to mid 30s, possibly even older than that. It was a book that you took out of your school library because you were daring and dangerous as a child and it wasn't going to scare you. It had dope ass illustrations in it. And just these really fun, scary stories. And we did a bunch of audio versions of it. And it's going to be awesome.
It is. I listened to a couple of the edited ones today. Because Evan sent them in my general direction. And they're pretty good. I recorded some. My wife recorded some. Evan did some. The guys from our comic podcast, Nonstop Comic Shop, did some. Yoshana Pascal did some.
Trish Reyes did one.
Yep.
Tiff is doing a couple.
They were really fun to do. And it's
I had to sing a little bit in mine. Fun. I had to meet Ty Doty Walker.
Where's my toe?
Where's my toe?
You had a lot of fun with it. We all had a lot of fun doing this. So that's going to be every day in October. Every day you're going to get a new chapter.
And if you like it, and even if you didn't, next year and the year after that, the book has sequels.
That's right.
So look forward to that in 365 days and 730 days.
That's it, everybody. On behalf of Dan and myself, keep playing games.
830 days, but 365, 5, 5, 10, pair of the 1, 6, and 6.
Reading Rainbow.
Reading Rainbow.
Reading Rainbow.